Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Jeff Yasuda, who is CEO and co-founder of Feed FM. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks so much for having me, Adrian.
You're very welcome. Now, Jeff, for the benefit of our listeners and readers and things, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do across at Feed FM?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think for starters, you know, I initially came out of the finance world, so I was a bean counter, CPA and all that. I did the investment banking thing. But, you know, I did venture capital after that. But, you know, really strange thing happened. You know, basically, we had started a venture fund back in sort of the 2000 timeframe, which, as you may recall, was the peak of the first internet bubble.
Yeah.
Right before it popped.
I was right in the thick of it.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a crazy, crazy time. But, you know, once kind of the bubble burst, it was very, very challenging. And quite frankly, I often say I've never worked so hard. This is my venture capital years, so hard for such little results.
Right.
I mean, it was really a really tough time. And so we ended up capping our fund, meaning no new investments, in kind of the 2005 timeframe. And, you know, I decided to get off the grid. You know, this is the first time in my life I was able to take some time off. So I traveled the world for about 6 months with my wife before we had kids, which, as you know, changes everything. But, you know, and really kind of two important life lessons came to me during that 6 months, if you will. Number one, life is too short not to work with, or life is too short to work with people that you don't like.
Yeah.
And number two, I think more importantly, life is too short not to pursue what you really love doing.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that love has always been music. You know, I've been playing in bands since I was, you know, 13 years old. I'm a music nut. I still perform in bands, and I wanted to do something in a very challenged, beleaguered, and at the time, a very tech, basically a in an industry, basically spend some time in an industry that was very resistant to technological change.
Right.
And so that's really, you know, where I fell into this crazy world of music and music licensing, and I dabbled around with some unsuccessful, some moderately successful, but, you know, it was really a startup scenario where it was challenging. And finally, though, we came across something called Feed FM, which is what I'm doing now. And to answer your question, Adrian, around kind of what we do, you know, it's a SaaS business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our thesis is music as a service.
Mm-hmm.
And very simply, what we do is kind of three things which we think are hard. Number one, we handle all of the brain damage associated with licensing and curation of music.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we make it crazy easy for our customers, many of which are not technology companies, to integrate music into their app or website or social media or whatever it may be. And the third thing is we provide the data.
Right.
Because invariably, these are businesses, and if you just add music, how does that really affect engagement, retention, and invariably revenues?
Perfect. I mean, I know a little bit about the music industry and the whole licensing thing because my brother is a musician.
has his own band and things, and
a very successful one.
Well, yeah, I mean, the band, you know, it's like they're called the Cinematic Orchestra, and they do the thing. They're not really kind of like so mainstream, but they have a hardcore and growing sort of following. And they released an album earlier this year, and so he's pretty much on the road, not constantly right now, but a lot. And actually, you know, they're on a quick cycle because it's the last that they haven't released a studio album for a while, and so they've got one, and then now they're going to do more touring, and then they're straight back in the studio to try and capitalize on this surge of new interest, and then get on with the next album, as it were.
Yeah, and you know, and it's interesting too, right? When you think about traditionally how musicians have made money, you know, there are very, very few musicians that can make a living purely on selling recorded music.
Yeah.
Most artists, most musicians make money on the road.
Yes.
You know, selling tickets, and I think even more importantly, selling merch. Merchandise, yeah. T-shirts, you know, sort of hard goods that memorabilia, maybe you could call it, right?
Well, absolutely, yeah. And so, you know, what's fascinating though is that and one of the things that's become really apparent with my brother's kind of music is since the last album, they had a track on that last album which is called "To Build a Home," which is a incredibly stripped back, austere track with a vocalist called Patrick Wilson on the recorded version, and a piano that's just like arranged beautifully, and it has other kind of strings and stuff in the background at points. But it's how popular that song has become and how many times it's been licensed for, you know, for TV shows and for advertisements and everything else. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, it's becoming a, you know, potentially a little bit of an albatross in many ways, because it's like the song that everybody knows, as it were. But it is such a nice little earner. It just keeps going. It's like a timeless sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's that licensing thing and how people are using music to add extra dimensions to their experience is fascinating. I mean, that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, is how... Mm. You're doing some interesting stuff to both enhance and differentiate the experience that customers get with audio and music. And that's the thing that I think is potentially a bit of a forgotten dimension of the customer experience, that sort of the audio kind of element and what it can add to it. I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing? So we can sort of unpick some of that sort of stuff, because it's not just... I'm putting a mixtape together for you and then kind of like streaming it across to your app, as it were.
Sure.
It's more than that, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and fundamentally, when you think about where people listen to music, right, it's when they commute, it's when they go out, you know, go to a restaurant, go to a bar, and obviously when you exercise, when you work out. And so... You know, I think, and just bringing back one point about your brother and the licensing element, which is really important, is that artists, the content creators that we all know and love, they have to be thinking of themselves as entrepreneurs, as business people, right?
Sure.
And so they have to be thinking about all the different revenue streams that they have, if it's live music, if it's selling T-shirts. And in your example, which I liked a lot, is if they license their music, right? And so, where we come in is we are essentially another revenue stream or a conduit to help the distribution of various artists. Mm. And so, you know, to add a little more specificity around what we do, the third segment I talked about, which is, you know, people listen to music when they work out, when they exercise.
Right. Yeah.
Fitness is a very core segment for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's interesting too is the major label, all labels are viewing fitness as really one of the next potential distribution points for music.
Right.
And so... what's different, though, and these are, again, are not music streaming apps like Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Tidal, Deezer, and the list goes on, and Pandora. You know, these are apps that people go to work at where music is a very core component, but it is secondary to the actual workout experience.
So right? Would I be right in saying that, like, it's, you know, how, what's it called? Like the Peloton kind of app where you've got that sort of stuff. So it's like the core activity is the cycling and the programs and things, but the music is the wraparound bit to get people motivated, in the mood, all that type of stuff.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And, you know, and there's actually been a ton of neurological research around the effect of music on power consumption, on your ability, you know, a person's perception of how hard they are working, the perception of how long they have been working, you know, where there are a lot of positive benefits to music. But without all the neurological commentary, music just makes it a lot more fun, right? It keeps your mind off things. It makes, you know, it makes the experience more enjoyable.
Right.
And it's really where we've been lucky to work with a lot of just, you know, great brands, you know, from big brands that have been around for eons, like Life Fitness and Nautilus, you know, to, you know, newer entrants like Fitbit, you know, apparel and sports companies like ASICS.
Okay.
To, you know, even the hot startups from Tonal and Mirror, you know, that you know, we've been working with, as well as just a whole swath of, you know, companies that are, you know, in what you call stealth mode, if you will, that are trying to do new types of fitness routines, because it, again, it's very personal to the individual, right? Some people like boxing, some people like, you know, spin classes, you know, like Peloton, you know, some people like HIIT workouts or high in, you know, high intensity interval training.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and music, again, we can obviously tailor that to the demographic. You know, is this a, you know, mostly female audience? Are these millennials? Are these, you know, parents? Are they, you know, it really changes, right? Are they located in Miami or are they located in Wisconsin or, you know, in the UK? So in any event, there's a lot of really fascinating things that you can do around music to get really back to what I know you're big about, Adrian, which is the, you know, the consumer experience, right? What is the user experience and how does music impact that?
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's, so you mentioned a couple of brand names and stuff there, you know, people like the ASICS of this world, the Fitbits, you know, the Nautiluses. I mean, can you give me a couple of examples of people that you've worked with and what you've done and how, what the benefits they are recreated? Because I'm intrigued by this idea.
Sure.
That audio, I can see audio, and we'll talk about this a bit later, is like audio starting to be explored, as it were. But it's been an oft forgotten or a thing that just gets tacked on, oh, we better play some music type of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But actually I'm more interested in kind of almost some of the stuff that you're kind of doing and how it's added to the experience, you know, backed by knowledge of the music, but also that whole neuroscience and the benefits thereof of the right type of music for the right type of activity or situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, you know, maybe just to start at a high level, music is the only medium that you can enjoy while you are doing something else. Right. Music is the only medium that you can enjoy while you are doing something else. Right. You can't drive a car while you're reading a text. Right. Or you shouldn't.
Sure.
Right. You can't drive a car, or you shouldn't be driving a car while you're watching a movie or a video. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, but you can drive a car while you are listening to a podcast or having a conversation or listening to music, whatever it might be. You know, the audio element is something, again, that you can keep in the background and enjoy while you do other things. Now, when you start getting to more commerce-related elements, you know, in our case, fitness, you work out, you know, but you can also shop, right? You can browse, you can, whatever it might be, you can make a electronic greeting card, you can design something. You know, there's a lot of different elements that you can, or a lot of activities you can do while you are enjoying this medium. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what's fascinating though is that generally companies for years and years have shied away from well, it's not so much audio, but have shied away from music because really around the complexity of licensing and the cost of licensing, right? It is expensive to hire lawyers to actually educate you on the ins and out of music licensing. What is a mechanical royalty? What is a sync license? What is a publisher? What's the difference between a composition and a master? Yeah, these are all things that, you know, most people and most, you know, executives of companies or marketing folks, they just say, give me the music. Right? Yeah. They don't want to know about all the specifics around licensing. And that's really where we come in. And we handle that, you know, we're almost like a company's outsourced music department.
Right.
Where they have, you know, Fitbit Coach, you know, since we talked about them, they actually started off as Fitstar, the program that we work with, which is really their workout content, which was started by a guy named Mike Mazur several years ago. He got acquired by Fitbit. And, you know, they were powering essentially their recurring exercise app, if you will. Mm-hmm. And now it's called Fitbit Coach. And really, we had a very simple integration whereby users could show up, they could pick whatever genre they wanted, and effectively, once they picked that genre, they would begin a workout routine.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of the fitness companies that we work with will actually record the workout dry, meaning without music. So mm-hmm. it's just the instructor and his or her voice, but no music. And then what we do is we overlay music on top via a stream.
Right.
And so, you know, the music is constantly changing. It's refreshed. It's not synchronized with the actual video or activity. And so, you know, these companies, they're streaming from our servers. They're not even, you know, they really don't even touch the music.
Right.
And so, you know, so it's been really fascinating. I think, you know, you mentioned, Adrian, the neurological elements, you know, which I think are, you know, in some cases difficult to quantify, but where it becomes interesting, at least for us and our customers that and our partners, is that there are ways to track KPIs or key performance indicators that will actually impact their business, right? Things such as average session time, things such as retention. So day 30, day 60, day 90 retention. Mm. And invariably, these all add up to one thing, which is lifetime value, LTV.
Yeah.
For these businesses, if we can help boost any of those elements of the LTV equation, we are effectively a revenue driver as opposed to a cost center, and that's where it starts getting really exciting around how music not only makes the experience, the consumer experience, more enjoyable, but how we can help enterprises, businesses, actually make more money by using curated and thoughtful music and audio.
Perfect. So, do you actually think that that audio is a forgotten dimension in customer experience, or is it an overlooked dimension in customer experience? I mean, because you're dealing with a very specific use case, mm-hmm. Particularly around, you know, fitness or activities, and increasing sort of motivation and engagement within that, so that people are more likely to complete and stay with, you know, programs. But if we were to step back and think,
yeah,
okay, what are other areas? What's the potential here? You know, is audio forgotten, and could it add more to other spaces, do you think? Given that, I mean, you're the audio expert in here, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, well, let's go back, right? Using audio, using music is not a new concept, right? I mean, they've had, you know, music with commercials since the beginning of, you know, television, right? Mm. You know, music has been a part of that background music and radio advertising, right? As they're introducing a product over the air, there's usually music in the background, right?
Sure.
So it's not a new concept per se, but in the digital age, where, you know, we are just bombarded with content, right? Mm. There's more content out there than you could ever experience and enjoy, you know, in multiple lifetimes, right? And I can't remember the numbers of, you know, how many new YouTube clips are uploaded every minute, right? It's you know, so large, we can't even fathom how, you know, how much content's out there. But, you know, I think, you know, as I talk about this with advertising executives, and we spent a lot of time actually talking not only to fitness brands, but also, you know, some CPG companies, right? And, you know, we used to work with various brands. I mean, I mentioned ASICS, but, you know, in the past we've worked with, you know, brands like Coca-Cola. And we've worked with, you know, a whole series, you know, alcohol, Budweiser, you know, or Anheuser-Busch, Smirnoff. You know, again, a whole set of different products. And, you know, I think fundamentally when, you know, we were asked about, can you do this? Or I just want to make a, you know, a cool summer playlist. You know, one of our first customers was Anheuser-Busch.
Right.
We did a program with Bud Light. And my buddy over there, you know, basically said, hey, we spend hundreds of millions of dollars every year sponsoring music festivals in the United States.
Right.
So Bud Light is the primary sponsor, so you can buy, you know, Bud Light and whatever flavor as the main beer. And, you know, they wanted to do some experiential, you know, Anheuser-Busch is very big on experiential marketing right now. And obviously at the core of that is content,
mm-hmm.
right? So the simple question was, hey, can you help me make a playlist of some of the, you know, upcoming, you know, festivals that we're promoting, and so I could slap it up on my, you know, on my social media.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and, you know, the my buddy over there, you know, you know, as I was thinking about it, I was like, God, who really does that? I don't think anyone does that. And, you know, that was really kind of our first paying customer as we built, you know, a licensed music experience, essentially, that could live in social media.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think so. But, you know, that was kind of a wild concept for them. Right. You know, he basically said, you know, he said literally he had stacks of license agreements, you know, going from artist to artist to artist on his desk. And he said, you know, if there's a way that you could simplify this process for me, so you know what I want to do. I want to have some sort of music experience for, you know, beer drinkers. Help me do that.
Sure.
And it was baffling to me that no one really had come up with a cost-effective way to do this. And again, I won't go into crazy detail about the licensing, but I think, you know, one interesting concept here that is worth talking about is the concept of internet radio, which only exists really in the United States as a statutory sort of compulsory license, whereby, you know, any company could get this radio license. You know, but it gets a lot more complex after that, right? There's a lot of different parties that are involved that have to get paid in a certain way. There's reporting, you know, there's infrastructure to make sure you're compliant with the statute and all that. And again, same sort of thing, Adrian. I mean, this is just more than what a brand, you know, a brand manager or a marketer or a C-level executive who said, look, I have a problem. I need to build engagement. And so, you know, just, you know, I want to use music, make this problem go away. Right? That's kind of what they want to know about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I just think it made me think about, because I was thinking about other applications, and particularly in that sort of service and experience space, and particularly around areas where, you know, sometimes it's inevitable, but people don't necessarily make it very pleasant or very easy. And the mm-hmm. thing that comes to mind is, like, you know, when you're waiting on the phone, if you call a call center or contact right. center and you're waiting on the phone and you get like chamber music or something. Now, I've got nothing against chamber music, but chamber music is loved by a small fraction of the population. Sure. Now, wouldn't it be great if you, once you've gone through the IVR where you've gone press one for sales, two for servers, three for whatever it might be, and you're through and it goes like, oh, and you're in, and then the music kicks in. Wouldn't it be great going, great if somebody just popped up and said, not loving this music, press one. We'll keep you in the queue, right. But press one for our kind of classic rock selection, press two for our kind of R&B selection, three for our hip hop, four for our kind of like our pop sort of selection. And then, you know, and just to make your wait a little bit better sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you just came up with a new business model, right? Maybe we should start that company right here. But,
I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I was like, I mean, from if you think about voice over IP kind of telephone systems right now, that's not going to be hard.
Yeah. Well, you know, Twilio, as you probably know, which, you know, essentially is doing that, making sort of telephony solutions very easy, you know, for companies to integrate. You know, they have a whole API document, you know, set of documents where, you know, and actually we've worked with these guys to actually build a prototype similar to what you were saying, right? You know, at the beginning of the, you know, hey, welcome to, you know, whatever it might be, and Selfridges, click, you know, press one for classic rock, press two for pop, press three for, you know, hip hop, whatever.
You know, I mean, I'm just thinking about it now, and I'm just thinking about it. Wouldn't it be great if you end up with the chamber music kicks in, and then all you hear is that kind of almost the, you know, that sound with where like a DJ just kind of like is just dragging the needle across the record and going, yeah, enough of that.
We've
mixed it up. Da da da. We can, and here's your option, sort of thing. Pressing, and we'll keep you in the queue. But this is hopefully going to make your thing kind of. We should talk about that, Jeff, a bit more. Actually.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's not do it now because this is like going to be in public. Let's try and keep it secret.
Yes. Well, you know, and I will say one thing though on that note, which is that, you know, a lot of folks, you know, we were working with this one brand in particular that was, you know, they were selling clothing to, you know, teenage women. And what was interesting is that they really wanted to have a consistent content story at every consumer touch point.
Right.
Right. So whether or not you're, you know, music, again, you think about, you know, what the largest consumer of music is, right? Millennials, Gen Z, basically young adults, if you will. You know, they are the largest and most voracious consumer of music, way more than baby boomers, you know, who like to think they invented the festival with Woodstock and all that. But, you know, but I think, you know, what's interesting around having, you know, and getting back to something that's near and dear to your heart around consumer experience is that having a consistent content story at every consumer touchpoint is pretty compelling, right? And so, you know, in your example, you know, you get to pick, you know, between all these different genres. But what if a brand like a, you know, like an edgy skateboard brand or an edgy clothing brand or whatever, you know, they have a very strong opinion about music, what they think matches the culture of their, you know, user base. So they may not give you, you know, press one, press two. They may say, you know what, we are all about, you know, the Sex Pistols and about, you know, the Ramones and about, you know, whatever, right? You know, Agent Orange, you know, TSOL, whatever, you know, the whatever band, right?
And well, it could be a case of like press one for loud or two for even louder.
Yeah, totally, right? Totally, you know, and so that's kind of funny, right? And so, you know, so I think, you know, this whole element of being able to use audio and use music, you know, we haven't even talked about podcasting yet, but podcasts, but, you know, I think, you know, using, being able to make it easy for brands, you know, to effectively access this great content invariably will help the bands, right? Because the bands, getting back to what we talked about in the beginning, are looking for or should be looking for multiple sources of revenue.
Absolutely. Then there's this other thing, which is not strictly music, but it's in that audio sort of field as well. Because I don't know if you saw, I think it was MasterCard a little while ago, have mm-hmm. started to experiment with this audio branding. And so they've got right. this thing where it's almost like a three-tone thing, which is a little bit yep. like the Intel Inside type of thing, or like mm-hmm. the Nokia. Remember the standard Nokia ringtone? I mean, oh, that's the Nokia ringtone. So yep. that it sort of ebbs and flows at from time to time, but Mascot have gone big on this. We've gone for this three-tone thing, which is yep. going to be almost like embedded in pretty much everything that they do. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, is that? I mean, because that's happened, and Mascot is like a big, big brand that do lots of sponsorship and lots of, different things. Do you think there are people, more and more people are starting to venture into this, the audio dimension? Because, when you get a big brand like that moving, invariably you get other people that follow. Like, oh, that's a good idea. We should do that.
Yeah, and again, the concept, I don't want to necessarily call it a jingle, but, the concept of sort of sonic branding and whatnot has been around for a while, right? I mean, it's a lot of, a lot of the, almost every major broadcast company has used that tone, right? If it was
yeah.
NBC that still has the dun, 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 or something like that, this is something that kind of, it's an audio cue almost that preps the brain for, oh, okay, this is, NBC content, and similarly, it could be a great audio cue that sets the brain for MasterCard, content.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I think having that, call it audio signature, again, I think anything that can be used to make a connection with their consumer is worth experimenting with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In your new book, around having sort of what is that punk thing to do to, what is that experimental, edgy, kind of slightly dangerous, a thing to experiment with, if it improves the consumer experience, I say go for it, right? And you may piss some people off, right? No brand has ever been successful, creating a brand by consensus.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you need something that stands apart. And by standing apart, you're not going to be everything to everybody. You're going to piss some people off. But, again, if audio is just another way to experiment, gosh, I'd say go for it, right? I mean, that's been a fundamental driver of our business.
Perfect. So if I was to say to you, Jeff, given your experience in this music and the audio sort of space, I mean, putting the and thinking about how it can improve, people's experience, what would be your best advice to people if thinking about actually how can I maybe use audio and music to improve my experience or to improve my engagement or connection and so on and so forth? And almost as a way of kind of helping people to get started, what should they be thinking about first?
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing is there has to be an appreciation and understanding that you need to compensate the rights holders, right? I think there have been a lot of brands that have played fast and loose with, we're not big enough, or, oh, we're helping, the labels and, musicians with distribution and exposure, by using their music.
Mm.
But the fact of the matter is that if you have not licensed that content, you are infringing, right? And invariably it hurts, the actual content creators, right? Many musicians, and I'm sure your brother can attest to this when he was starting out, we're living hand to mouth, right? These are, touring in stinky vans with crowded stinky vans, staying at very, very low end hotels just to make it work, right?
Yeah.
Sleeping on people's couches, right? And so, I think it's important to understand that, these artists, if you will, need to be compensated. And there's a whole series of groups that have essentially evolved over time to protect those copyrights. But I think the first piece of advice that I would say is that if a brand is looking to use music, you know, understand that there is a price to that.
Right.
And I think after that, you know, and again, not everyone has millions of dollars, right, to license music, you know, for a, you know, for a commercial, mm-hmm. right? Particularly a, you know, very popular song, right? And, you know, so there's a lot of different gradations and ways to use music. There's different pay structures. But a lot of it really, I mean, fundamentally, that's why we've created Feed FM, right? I mean, a lot of it is as we build our business, you know, we want everyone or anyone who thinks about, gosh, how do I use music? You know, well, look, I, you know, just go to the Feed FM guys, right?
Yeah.
I use them because, you know, they've got a whole series of different ways to do it. I don't even, to be honest, know the specifics of the licenses, but just go to the Feed FM guys. They'll figure it out for
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And almost like it's a, you know, a Chinese menu, right, of different types of ways that you can use music. Oh, you know, well, oh, I didn't realize it was going to cost this much for a commercial, so maybe that's not what I could do, but I could do something on social media and it'll be this price, right? I think that's really, you know, or I want to, you know, add one song to a video that I'm doing, or I want to, you know, power music for, I want to build an app that just has heavy metal music, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever, right? And so these are all different use cases, and a lot of what we're about is, hey, how can we make it crazy easy, you know, to really remove the brain damage associated with licensing music. So everyone gets paid, you know, a business owner can focus on what they do best. If it's, you know, if it's creating great fitness apps, if it's, you know, selling cool clothes, if it's, you know, making skateboards, whatever it is, right? These are, you know, this is what their core competency is, not licensing music. And again, that's where we come in.
So I guess the kind of the headline for that is, like, just because you can listen to it on Spotify or YouTube for free doesn't mean to right. say that you can use it for free in your business.
Right. And to be honest, I know you say that, you know, laughing, but there are a lot of folks that think, oh, well, I own a Spotify account, so I can do whatever I want with that music, right? I'm paying for it. Yeah. No, that's not really how it works.
Read the terms and conditions.
Yeah, that's right. There are a lot of smart people, you know, that think, you know, oh, I've got a Spotify, you know, and a very easy example on that, which is a real problem, is, you know, you go to a gym, to play music, what's called a public performance license, you can't, you know, a trainer can't just plug in their phone and start playing their Spotify account.
No.
That is not a legal use case, right?
Yeah.
And the rights holders will come after you, they will sue you, and you will lose.
Yeah.
And so these are all sort of things that, again, may seem like it's okay, but you know, when you start running a business, you know, this is a very different scenario.
Perfect. So, Jeff, before we kind of go, you actually mentioned my new book, kind of Punk CX,
yeah.
which actually we've talked about before, and it's we had a kind of a really kind of good riff around kind of the, you know, the premise and everything else. But I, at the end of these interviews, I've been asking people just a couple of questions just to get that. It's like a bit of ongoing social research that I'm doing, I guess.
Yeah.
And the thing I've been asking them, the first question I've been asking them is, like, what one or two words would you say would you think would describe a punk approach to customer experience?
So personalization, I think, is a punk approach per se, right? And so what do I mean by that? Well, there's a cool company. It's actually a fellow, you know, we should do a separate podcast of the importance of getting to know fellow founders as a way to, you know, say support group, because it's lonely at the top, you know, starting a company oftentimes, and it's not always easy. So, you know, it's a great support group, but a fellow founder of a company, it's a company called Vidora. A guy named Alex Holub is the CEO, really just super smart guy who is an expert in artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And so he effectively, you know, has done the thinking around, Well, gosh, you know, when I approach a website, or, you know, if I'm about to buy something, let's say a very simple use case, you know, go to a website, why can't that website be personalized in such a way that it makes the most sense to me, right? It's the colors I like, maybe, you know, with an audio angle, it's the sounds that I like, it's the experience that is really tailored to me, right? You know, I'd like a certain type of thing. And this gets a little bit towards, I don't know if you remember that movie, Minority Report with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Where at one point, you know, he goes to the store, they sort of flash something in his eyes, they do a retinal scan, realize it's this, you know, God, I can't even remember what his character's name is. I was going to say Ethan Hawke, but I think that's Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, but it starts flashing, you know, content that's relevant to him, right? Mm-hmm. And so with Fedora, you know, what these guys are doing, they had this cool tagline at one point. I don't think it's what they're doing exactly right now, but it's AI. It was AI for UI, right?
Right.
Artificial intelligence for, you know, user experience or user interface. And which I thought was a great one-liner. But basically, you know, imagine if the consumer experience, you know, can be personalized, right? So it's just how you like it, right? Your example, you know, with the phone, right? You know, with hold music. What if they somehow figured out that they knew it was you and they could provide individualized content, right? Maybe it's a podcast segment that's, all right, wait, oh my gosh, it's going to be 5 minutes. So we are going to deliver, you know, Adrian, an amazing podcast experience about, you know, I don't know, best seafood restaurants in the, you know, in the south of England. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever it is, right? That's something that's relevant and topical to you, right? I mean, it, you know, again, the same sort of personalized approach for, you know, consumer experience. I think that's pretty badass. And I don't think anyone's really doing that.
Yeah, I think people have talked about it in terms of this idea of liquid design. Particularly in a digital space. We haven't quite got there as yet. And it all creates up all sorts of other sort of challenges around tracking and data and privacy and security and all that type of stuff. But anyway, it's still a kind of an interesting idea.
But it's not punk if it's not going to piss someone off, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. So, Jeff, the second question that I had was, maybe you've already kind of answered it, but I'll ask it anyway. So it's like, what company or brand do you think epitomizes a punk approach to customer experience?
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's where I, you know, I dropped the Fedora name. I mean, I think that's, you know, and I prefer to, you know, in some ways talk about, you know, startups as opposed to, you know, bigger companies per se, because they're really at the forefront, right? That, you know, of changing things. Sure. I mean, if forced, you know, Apple during the Steve Jobs days, of course, right? You know, they were very punk in their design and, you know, almost Steve Jobs dogmatic, you know, stubbornness around, you know, I know what customers want before they even know they want it.
Yes.
Right. And so, you know, so I think, you know, a lot of this, you know, it changes over time. I mean, back in the day, remember the Sony Walkman, you know, I had one of those, you know, that was the first portable, you know, music player where you could actually choose what was being played. And that was bonkers at the time, right?
Sure.
And, you know, and I had multiple flavors of that one, from the, you know, first version to the yellow version, right? I had the first, you know, generation iPod, you know, but these things change over time. You know, Samsung, I think, quite honestly, is overtaking, you know, Apple in product development, right? It's almost like the, you know, the Samsung phones innovate faster than the Apple ones did, right? And I'm sure Steve is turning in his grave. But, you know, but I think fundamentally, you know, there are companies, you know, I think quite frankly, Amazon's approach to, you know, to the Echo, right? Using voice as a means. I mean, again, getting back to the audio element, right? I believe the world is going to be a place, you know, within the next 10 years, there may not be any keyboards anymore, right? Where people will just talk and say what they want, kind of like, God, what was that movie? You know, Danger, Mr. Robinson kind of thing, right? Where you know, you're just dictating to some, you know, some presence in the air and stuff happens, right? And so, you know, and maybe even, you know, after that, there may not even be a need for audio. There'll just be some implant in your brain and you think it, right? It happens, right?
Bring on the Matrix.
Exactly, exactly.
Brilliant. Jeff, thank you for that. That's great. I mean, I love that you're picking startups, but also kind of like big companies that still operate with a slightly startup mentality, even though they're sure. behemoths as well. But sure. I just want to say thank you for making the time for us to talk to us today, and also kind of shedding a little bit of light on the music and audio dimension and how it's an area that doesn't often get talked about when it comes to, you know, service and experience, because I think it's an interesting kind of area that could be further explored or more explored. So, yeah, just want to say thanks for sharing your time and your insight with us today. That's been great.
Yeah, of course. And Adrian, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure chatting with you. And we should cover some of these other topics again, too, in the future.
Excellent.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.